Orleans. For they'll fill you with whiskey and porter till you are not able to stand. And the very next thing that you know, me lads, you've landed in Van Diemen's land.
For rising sun in the diamonds, you'd think she was queen of the land.
Bedford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. 617-627-3800. Or you can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. I don't know if you checked the page today, Lisa Nichols.
I have.
But I got the announcement of the Supreme Court nominee out within about 10 minutes of the actual announcement.
And I think it was up to
335 something. People had seen it by the time we get out of there.
Pretty
tonight.
Awesome.
So pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so right out you get that kind
now
of stuff.
Now you see it. You just gotta like the page. You're gonna press that little thumbs up.
Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. Get in there and be a part of it because Lisa's talking about craft beer. I throw out the most important news stories every single morning. So it's some good reading in there. I promise you this, if you follow us, you will be a day ahead of everyone else in the news cycle. So that when you see the stories make the front page tomorrow, you'll be like, oh yeah, I knew that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to talk intelligently about
them. I was actually going to post that on the page today about the nominee for the Supreme Court, and you beat me to it.
Oh, yeah. I was actually on a client call at the time when I did that, too. Hopefully my employers aren't listening.
Derek, what is that clicking noise?
Yeah.
Nothing. There's somebody at the door.
We are going to be talking about Merrick Gardner tonight. We're also going to be talking about the European Union-Syria deal. We promise this is not boring. This is actually important because a very significant agreement is going to be hammered out tomorrow somewhere in the European Union, probably in Brussels. It's where they do a lot of this stuff to decide the fate of millions of Syrian, Middle Eastern and African refugees who are trying to get into Europe. This is one of the most important stories of our day. So we'll be talking about that thing that happened, what's hot. Did you hear our new name for Stump the Co-host? It is almost light outside.
Do you know how nice it was driving in? And it wasn't pitch black. And it's amazing.
It was light when I was driving over, which is nice.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Sunday morning, getting into work was a slight struggle after closing the night before and losing that hour of sleep. Yeah. But I like it light out.
That hour comes in handy. So it's going to be a little bit lighter from here on in. And other than that, Lisa, what's going on in our world?
Well, in local news, we learn parade revelers will have a longer time to get drunk. I mean, watch the parade. A federal judge on Tuesday ordered the Walsh administration to allow the St. Patrick's Day parade to march along its typical route through South Boston, saying the city's attempt to shorten the parade, even for safety reasons, interfered with First Amendment rights of organizers. Quote, this case does fall in a matter of constitutional protection, said U.S. Judge Richard G. Stearns, citing the U.S. Supreme Court cases that found that parades, like other forms of free speech and assembly, are, quote, a public drama of social relations. Chester Darling, an attorney for the parade organizers, suggested the city's attempts to shorten the parade were politically motivated. Parade organizers have been at odds with Mayor Walsh in recent years, based on part of the mayor's failed attempt during the first year of his office in 2014 to negotiate the inclusion of gay and lesbian veterans who were allowed to march last year. Boston's Police Commissioner William B. Evans described the growing concern that the dynamic of the parade has changed in recent years, with more unruly out-of-towners crowding the parade route and side streets. They drink alcohol openly, vandalize property, and urinate in public, he said.
Clutch your pearls.
Right? Evans said the number of people who congregate on roofs along the parade route and the heights have occurred growing concerns. That's what I call the seaport in the summer.
Yeah.
People urinating everywhere,
yeah.
Unruly crowds, people getting in fights. That's every night.
Hey, have the police been near Lansdowne Street on a Friday night or a Saturday night?
Yeah.
Anywhere near Lansdowne Street?
People are actually getting shot.
The
only thing that's getting shot are beers in South Boston during the parade. They're shotgunning them. Nobody is shooting each other like down at Who's On First in Fenway at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night.
This is my question. What is Mayor Walsh thinking? What is he thinking? Why are you picking a fight with the Southie parade organizers when you know darn well you're going to lose?
Now, if people were living under the snow pile last year and didn't actually come up and see the light of day, you might have missed that the parade last year was shortened because they completely changed the logistics of the streets. 90%
right.
of all the streets were made one ways in South Boston
because
nobody moved their car for 3 months.
Well, because you couldn't get the snow out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if people moved their cars.
Now, Derek, I understand the cause for concern, but people are stupid. You had kids in South Boston jumping out of third floor and going on snow piles. I get it. Last year, you shortened the route to make it easy. Why this year?
That's
if you haven't noticed, Derek, there's no snow on the ground.
This is my question. This is why I'm wondering why you would pick this fight. Because all this has done is irritated everybody in South Boston, cost the taxpayers money, and made the mayor look bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no gain here. So the only reason I can think of why you would actually pick that fight is because you are trying to save money. Because you
exactly.
don't have the budget to pay for the police detail. If that's the case,
spread out, yes.
Don't hide behind this
vague
public safety.
Don't give me the BS that, you know, having a shortened route is going to cause people not to come from out of town. People are still going to come from out of town. I mean, when you have what they're saying Sunday is supposed to be 55, 60 degrees, so many people are going to come. You're going to have more problems if you're squeezing everybody into small streets between West Broadway, East Broadway, and down L Street.
Well, everybody knows when you get a bunch of Irish together in close quarters, add some alcohol,
thing,
they fight.
Of course. If I remember correctly, last year, the number of arrests were down. The year prior, the number of arrests were down. We actually talked about it on this show, saying, hey, congratulations, South Boston, for not being asses and getting arrested.
No, that also coincided with the end of Menino's crackdown on public drinking, which was getting absurd over there.
Well, you can actually go down to Providence, and they lifted the ban for a couple days on open containers.
New York City just said, you know what, if you're drinking in public or if you pee in public, that's just a misdemeanor. We're going to give you a ticket and send you on your way. We're not arresting people for that during St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, but good God. You cannot have a solo cup. What could you be drinking?
The horrors. But that's what was going on down there a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. If this is a budget problem, then come out and say it's a budget problem, because everybody gets that the city has a budget problem. So what Mayor Walsh should have done is come out and said, look, we can have a shorter parade route and money for teachers in Boston schools, or we can have a longer parade route and I got to lay off some teachers. If you come out and say that, nobody's going to pick a longer parade over teachers.
Yeah.
Anybody that does is an idiot. The way that they handled this was atrocious. Because they just came. Because first of all, when did they announce it? Like Sunday?
3 days ago, yeah.
Like a week before the parade is supposed mm-hmm. to happen, just all of a sudden, boom, shorter route. Why? Public safety. which is the cry that they use when they don't want to tell you what's really going on.
Of course.
Public safety is...
We're watching out for you, your well-being,
yeah,
to make sure, you know, you don't get urinated on or a beer bottle thrown at your head.
But that's not what they're saying when they say public safety.
No,
when they say public safety, they're like terrorism. Mm-hmm. That's what most people hear when they say public safety. Anybody who's been to the St. Patrick's Day parade knows that anybody who tries anything stupid down there is going to be dead in a matter of seconds.
No, and, you know, if you've ever also been to the parade, you know the entire South Boston shuts down. Any of the bars. You cannot go in any of the bars or restaurants past 4 o'clock. So everybody just jams in the house in different apartments. I've been in multiple house parties, multiple apartments, where police come in and just, you know, hey, too many people on the roof deck,
yeah,
too many people on the patio. I've never seen a problem.
No. There's
people get it. They're like, okay, let's move on to the next
one.
There's
guys with guns walking down the middle of the street. The terrorists aren't showing up for this one.
Yeah.
So you need a better excuse than public safety. And given that the city has reached a truce with Southie over claiming parking spaces, that the days of taking the Madonna statue from the shrine in the backyard, mm-hmm, and putting it in the space that you shoveled are
next
over.
Next to the bathtub and, yeah,
and
the bureau.
The city has reclaimed all of its wayward traffic cones. Throw them a bone. Because for generations, no one ever thought you'd do anything about the parking spaces. But Southie has pretty much rolled over on that one and played nice. You're going to torment these people with the stupid F1 Formula Racing this summer. Give them a freaking, yeah, parade.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a freaking parade. There are some sacred cows in the city of Boston. And the parade is one of them. What are they thinking?
Yeah, Mayor Walsh, you're not looking any better than you were.
Have you got any rationale for why they would do this other than we don't have the money?
It was money. First thing that I was like, no. They don't want to put the security. They don't want to put the extra detail on. Well, it's so much easier when you have a smaller and shortened parade route. You don't have to cover as much land.
If you can't afford it, just come out and say we can't afford it. One of two things will happen. The voters will say, okay, you're prioritizing education and basic services ahead of a parade that essentially benefits one neighborhood. We're okay with that. And even parts of Southie will get it.
Derek, we do not use logic here in the city of Boston.
Or some private investor will come in and pony up the cash to have the full-length parade route.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason we have this 4th of July concert every year is because David Mugar throws out the money for it. The city couldn't afford to do that. So if that's a problem, just bring it out there. Don't cut the parade route short and then be like, public safety.
Yeah.
And I mean, walk away and think you're going to get away with it.
You would have probably Suffolk fronting the money, and then you would have their signs plastered all over in green. And yeah, little leprechauns wrapped up in Suffolk branding.
You guys closed for evacuation day tomorrow?
No.
It's evacuation day tomorrow. It's a holiday.
Is it?
Yeah. You get the day off.
Mm.
I don't either.
How convenient.
Then again, I work in an office that still doesn't recognize Martin Luther King Day. So
yeah.
I make a point of, I take it off on my own dime every year because I'm not a racist, unlike my employers, who are not racist. They just don't like giving us time off. National news. President Barack Obama has chosen Merrick Garland to replace Samuel Alito as the 9th Supreme Court Justice. Judge Garland currently serves as Chief Judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals, D.C. Circuit, and previously helped the Justice Department with investigations of Oklahoma City bomber Timothy McVeigh and Unabomber Ted Kaczynski. The 63-year-old Garland is respected on both sides of the political divide and generally known as a constitutionalist who today said, quote, "Fidelity to the Constitution and the law has been the cornerstone of my professional life," end quote. In spite of that, some Senate Republicans, including Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Chuck Grassley, say they will not hold hearings on Garland's nomination, opting to wait until the next president is in office to fill the vacancy. Mr. McConnell went as far as to call Mr. Garland today and say, don't bother coming to Capitol Hill.
Yeah, don't show up. What's so funny about this is actually a reasonable choice by President Obama.
This is a beyond reasonable choice, okay?
And what's more humorous in this whole situation, if you look at clips back from the 90s, even into the early 2000s, you have people like Mitch McConnell, glorifying this man and saying, Obama came out in his speech today and said, going past all legal minds and whatnot to have chosen this man, I have talked to many Democrats, but also many Republicans. Yep. And this name is continually brought up because he is, I mean, Garland is somebody that really doesn't have anything to lose. He has a lifetime seat. So yep. It's not like he needs to put aside any of his life. He's a great choice.
He's already in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
He has, his court is usually the last stop for a lot of major cases involving the federal government before the Supreme Court. So he knows the lawyers. He knows the process. He clerked for Justice William Brenner. So he's seen the inner workings of the Supreme Court. He is a center-left, very slightly left.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a vanilla moderate.
He is a center-left constitutionalist. And this is a really, really smart move by Barack Obama. Credit where credit is due, always. Because the Republicans look like idiots for opposing this.
Oh, absolutely.
First of all, because it's obstructionist and ridiculous. And there is nothing in the Constitution. I don't care what Joe Biden said 4 years ago. There is nothing in the Constitution that says you postpone the Supreme Court process during an election year.
Mm-hmm.
Because that doesn't just affect this court. That also affects the next court. So do we want to have 2 years of decisions made by eight justices? No, we do
not.
Which
are constantly going to be split. And we're in a year where there are very, very big cases going on.
If it were November, if there were a president-elect, I would take a different view of this. And I would say the incumbent president should be allowed to select the nominee. Instead, we got the Republicans who are like, no, anything Barack Obama wants, we're going to say no. First of all, you look like a bunch of obstructionist idiots for doing this. Second of all, I don't get the political calculus here. Because there is no guarantee that a Republican is going to win the White House. And if Hillary Clinton gets in there, whoever gets nominated is probably going to be 1,000 times more hostile to conservative causes than Merrick Garland will be. This is a gift-wrapped present for conservatives from the President of the United States.
The thing is,
if you don't approve him, what you get come next January could be a lot worse.
Mm-hmm. Obama could have came out and, you know, nominated a minority woman just to fit that whole, you know, liberal stance. But he's coming out and putting out, as you say, in a gift box wrapped up.
He could have put another
moderate, somebody that would be very appealing to Republicans.
He could have put another progressive like Elena Kagan.
Reasonable. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at it from the GOP side, they are not going to budge. Because now if they budge, they look stupid to their own.
No, that's not.
But
Mitch McConnell looks stupid either way. Mitch McConnell shouldn't have opened his mouth in the first place, okay? You said a dumb thing when you said you were going to block the nomination. Now that you've got a dream nominee, walk it back. The American people will forgive you. Yeah, there might be some yahoos out in the sticks who are like, the Republican Party's betraying their values, man.
But you know what? I don't think it's so much coming from the people. I think it's so coming from inside the Republican
group.
No, absolutely.
It's coming.
You have so many people. I mean, the Republican group right now is imploding on itself. Now, you're trying to tell me if you have Mitch McConnell all of a sudden backtracking, you think that's going to propel the GOP to a higher position that's already in now?
Can I tell you something?
No, it's even going to be worse.
It is coming from a small number of establishment Republicans who are terrified that they're going to lose their base.
Exactly, and they have dug in their feet and they are not budging.
But
you are going to have more controversy within the party if you now switch it. They're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't.
No, they're not damned if they don't.
They are.
They're not damned if they don't. Because let's say that voter, let's say that those base voters all freak out that Mitch McConnell walks it back and approves this guy.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the voters. I'm talking about the people within the party.
But this is what it's about. The people in the party are afraid because they don't want to lose the base.
They are completely ruining the party. I understand
that. That's what the establishment is operating on. They're operating on this fear that they're going to lose the base. You're not going to lose the base.
No, and as a Republican, it's shameful to see where this party is going and how they are so divided.
There is no third party alternative. Your voters are not going to turn around and vote for Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton. They're locked in. You are one of two parties in this country. You cannot lose the 39% that you currently hold. If it's even, it might be 36 right now. You can't lose that. So stop being idiots and alienating the independent voters and the Democrats who might be sympathetic to your cause, who might be interested in growing your party, and nominate a sensible candidate. That's all.
Washington is insensible, Derek.
You're not going to do any better than Merrick Garland. You're not. Absolutely not.
I just want to see a montage, a complete montage of all the clips of GOP senators, governors, anybody related within government praising. And just over and over. And we'll just play that reel for Mitch McConnell.
I'll
be
put
like,
on.
You know what? Oh, wait, that's me.
I'll put on my prediction hat right now. Okay? This is my prediction hat.
And
coming
you're out. It's pretty good. You have good odds.
I have a pretty good track record on these things. If the Republicans fail to approve Merrick Garland and get him on the Supreme Court by September, which is when we need him there, Barack Obama will endorse Hillary Clinton, and one of Hillary Clinton's first acts as President of the United States will be to nominate Barack Obama to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's my prediction. Right here, right now, March 15th, 2016, or March 16th, 2016. We'll see if it comes true.
Interesting.
Good odds. In other national news, there's one less Republican to kick around as Marco Rubio withdrew from the presidential race last night after losing his home state of Florida by 18 points to Donald Trump. Trump also won North Carolina and Illinois and holds a 2/10 margin over Ted Cruz in Missouri with 99% of precincts reporting. Trump did lose Ohio to the state's current government, candidate John Kasich, who is now hoping to rally Rubio supporters to his campaign. Hillary Clinton swept four states on the Democrat side, though she won Illinois by less than 2 percentage points and holds a lead of just 0.2 percentage point in the still undecided Missouri primary.
It was so close on both ends. I mean, I think it was maybe a 2,000 vote.
It's 0.02%, or it's 0.2% in both the Democrat and Republican races as to who is going to be
the winner.
There
are rumors going on right now about a recount.
There is an automatic recount if it is less than 0.5%.
Okay.
Or the candidates have the right to ask for a recount automatically if it's, and there's no challenge to that if it's less than 0.5%.
No, I mean, if we look at first Republican side, this was the best that Trump could have done. I predicted that, of course, Kasich would win Ohio. I believed that Rubio would not win Florida. I actually didn't think that he would back out instantly last night. I thought that he would wait until the morning and do it. But it's clear who states are choosing as their candidate. And what's so more amazing to me is that you can go in any journalism publication today, you can go on any media outlet, and it will say, you know, Trump had a great night, but America still doesn't like him. Well, no, they do. They're voting for him. And you can tell that by the number of delegates that he has and by the amount of percentage that he's winning each state. He won Florida, Marco Rubio's home state.
Yeah.
And you're telling me people don't like him? No, that is not the silent majority because they are very loud.
He won Florida by 18 points.
Right?
It's not like it was
double
even
digits,
close.
Like 6-7, no, double digits.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a landslide. I think they were calling it when, 70% were reporting?
They called it. The polls closed at 8 o'clock last night, and CNN
I think
had
Trump
the projection at 8:01.
Maybe, yeah, at 8:05.
8:01. No, it was 8:01.
You know, Rubio last night, he backed out. I think this is going to be the game changer because now we're going to figure out where all of his supporters are going. Instantly, you saw Ted Cruz come out and, you know, have a good speech about him and congratulate him on his progress and said, hey, we're going to open our arms to anybody that, you know, is from Rubio's camp into ours.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at Trump's
speech, part of the reason for him doing that, by the way, is that in Pennsylvania, which is a winner-take-all primary,
which is coming up,
John Kasich filed, you needed 2,000 signatures to get on the ballot. Kasich filed 2,100 or so, and Rubio's people challenged that filing. So part of his reasoning for trying to get the Rubio folks on board is to get them to drop that challenge so he can be on the ballot. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to happen. Kasich's speech last night was very impressive. Kasich really came off as sort of the Joe Biden of the Republican Party. You know, the sort of gentle, good-natured, optimistic, strong belief in the middle class, middle-of-the-road kind of candidate that Americans are supposed to want in the White House. And it was a really good moment for him. I think Rubio had a really good night last night, too, in his concession speech. Kasich, it was interesting, was interrupted by a protester at the start of his speech and actually went out of his way to make sure that the protester was not handled violently, mm-hmm. which is something that we don't see from the Donald, which would be nice to see from the Donald.
Now, you have to question, what is Kasich still doing? You had predicted that he is staying in it, or he was staying in it until Ohio, just to make himself look better. You have to wonder, what is next for him? Does he actually believe in this mind of delusion that he will be the next president of the United States?
Yes, he does. Because there are two routes to that.
The
short-term route.
First, he has come out and said, none of the candidates that are still in it are going to get enough delegates. We are going to go into a brokered convention. Does he honestly think, being the third contender, that everybody is just going to start looking around at the convention and going, hey, that guy.
It depends. It sounds good.
That's delusion. Numerically, there's no possible way. He actually has to win 100%+ of all the remaining delegates.
He doesn't, though.
No, he does.
He just has to win enough.
Count them up.
He just has to win enough delegates to keep Trump from locking up the nomination.
Even if we go into a brokered, there's no possible way that he would be chosen.
That is not true.
That is true.
That's not true. Because what happens in a contested convention is the delegates all vote who they were sent to vote for on the first ballot.
And what is the likelihood of that?
Nobody gets the nomination because nobody has the votes. And at that point, all bets are off. The delegates can go with anybody that they want to. Now, think about the environment where this is happening. And keep in mind, I said there are two paths to the presidency for John Kasich. One is, and as I said last week and several times, he needed to prove that he could deliver Ohio. Not only did he deliver Ohio, but he won more votes than Hillary Clinton did in Ohio. So he's proven that he can win Ohio for the Republicans. That's huge. So path number one is vice president. And he made a very, very strong case for himself to be the vice presidential candidate with the Ohio win last night. If he can knock off a couple of more states, if he can knock off Pennsylvania, if he can knock off New York, if he could do well in California, although that seems to be solidly in Trump's column right now, if he can pick up a few more of those states, no matter what happens, John Kasich is your likely vice presidential candidate. And in 8 years, you'll get the opportunity to run for president. The other possibility is you go into a contested convention. Think about what's happening in the background. As we mentioned earlier, the Republican establishment is imploding. They don't want Donald Trump. They don't want Ted Cruz. So the person they are most likely to coalesce around at that point becomes John Kasich. So he's got every reason in the world to stay in this.
And
it's really a no-lose situation for him, because the worst thing that happens is he finishes third in a bunch of states, wins a couple of small states.
I'm not talking about third closely behind Cruz, what may be in a few states, but I'm talking about in the low single digits. Now, Cruz is actually a contender to go up against Donald Trump. And the only way that I think Trump is still a lock at this point, if you want to completely solidify a lock and absolutely lock in that you are going to have the presidency, you bring on Kasich as your VP, which is very, very likely
I think that's hugely likely, because what if Donald Trump takes on John Kasich as his VP and the establishment is backing Kasich, then this is basically Donald Trump's way of saying, in spite of everything that's gone on here, we're all good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can play ball with you guys. I'll take him on. You'll still have your voice in the government. I'm still going to do what I do. Everybody goes home happy.
Now, I brought it up before. I thought that Cruz could push up against Trump in many states if he had Rubio backing. If Rubio got knocked out. Now, in an instance where we look at a situation like Kasich with his home state in Ohio and Marco Rubio in Florida, if Marco Rubio had won Florida, I think that would have locked him in for a VP. Because Rubio would make, I think, a fantastic president. But many things have hurt his campaign. You know, the Gang of Eight bill and multiple other things. If he had won Florida, I think he would have had something to prove that he would have been a great VP. He could have jumped on Cruz. That would have propelled him past Trump.
While I agree with you that he'd be a great president, there is no way that Donald Trump could have chosen Marco Rubio as his running mate after
After I'm
6 months of little Marco commentary.
I'm saying jump on Cruz.
But the problem with Cruz is, look at all of the candidates who have dropped out, okay? We don't have Jeb Bush. We don't have Chris Christie.
Have Jeb Bush's brother coming out today and endorsing Cruz.
We don't have crazy Ben Carson. But this is the thing. Apart from Christie, a bunch of these guys have come out and said, well, now those votes are going to go to Cruz. It's not happening. It's not happening. Ted Cruz was only in danger of winning one state last night, and that's Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they got to go count the absentee ballots, which is going to take them until Friday. Or actually, you have until Friday to send in your absentee ballot, which means the Hillary folks will be furiously filling out absentee ballots for the next 3 days.
Poor interns.
But none of that momentum that any of those other candidates have. I mean, it certainly didn't go to Trump. We know that. But it didn't go to Cruz either. Didn't go to Rubio. It doesn't. I think some of it has gone to Kasich because his numbers have gone up a little bit as the field has narrowed.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, with Kasich, he has focused so much on the Midwest. And what if you look at any of those states other than Ohio, his best placing was fifth and a couple thirds. So if you're looking at somebody going up against Hillary, essentially we want somebody, as a Republican in the party, to be able to go up against Hillary Clinton. We understand that. John Kasich could not win against Hillary Clinton.
I disagree with that.
Reality. How can you say that?
Kasich was second in New Hampshire.
I'm talking about the Midwest.
Oh.
Which is where his whole entire focus, that should be his land.
Because Kasich right now is being overshadowed by what's happening with Trump and Cruz. And if Trump and Cruz were not in this thing, would Kasich be the front runner? I think you'd probably be looking at a very strong battle between him and Marco Rubio.
But even if we go into a contested convention, as far as the GOP is imploding on themselves, they want to win. When it comes down to it, and they have to put in Trump, there's a really good chance that it might happen. Far more than picking a Kasich.
I think either one of them is a strong contender against Hillary Clinton. A very strong contender against Hillary Clinton.
No way.
Because John Kasich comes from
Cruz against Clinton, Clinton's winning. Kasich versus Clinton, Clinton's winning.
I disagree with that.
Trump and Clinton, Trump is winning.
I disagree with that because there's that lack of enthusiasm for Hillary. The people who are Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump supporters who like that anti-establishment tone toward Wall Street, toward big business, toward all of that, are going to align themselves more with Kasich than they are with Hillary Clinton. Because everybody knows that Hillary Clinton is 100% Wall Street paid for, bought and sold candidate. She is in the pocket of Wall Street. She is in the pocket of Big Pharma. She is in the pocket of the health insurance industry. She's in the pocket of every special interest that she needs to be in the pocket of.
Yeah, but Derek, you and I understand that, and majority of people do. But my fear is that come election day, because all Bernie Sanders friends, I'm hoping that they just do write-ins and don't go straight to Hillary Clinton. I'm assuming those voters, because it's impossible,
I think,
for Sanders to win. I mean, essentially.
The labor unions will back whoever they're told to back, which will be Hillary Clinton in that situation. I think a lot of the young voters will just walk away. I think voters under 30...
Well, I hope people are smart enough to realize she was bought when she was Secretary of State.
Oh.
She's the worst candidate that you have seen. She has a big loser stamp on her forehead. She lost to Barack Obama 8 years ago.
She was bought when she was First Lady. That's how far back
it
goes.
You mean that magical foundation that had millions and millions of dollars funneled into it? Wait, that didn't go to... You know, the needy and then... No?
No.
What, so you're saying that went to fund her campaign?
It appears to have gone to people connected to the Clinton family who were involved in what may or may not have been charitable or for-profit projects in other parts of the world.
Mm.
So it's basically you give money to the Clinton Foundation and then they give it to one of their friends who goes and builds a school.
So what you're saying is if she were to be president, you know, she maybe turn an eye to many of these foundations or practices, say, on Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Why not to vote for her?
It's the same thing Dick Cheney did when he was vice president, only she's going to do it from the highest office in the land.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, power to her if she can pull it off.
Think about that one for a minute.
WMFO Medford, I must say that.
In sports news, I'm going to bring it up. That's sports news. In sports news, we learned we may see a new player throwing out punishments in the NFL. After more than a year of fighting and litigation over how NFL investigates and mets out punishment to its players, league officials and the union are moving closer to a deal that would involve Commissioner Roger Goodell giving up power off the field player discipline. The NFL Players Association Executive Director DeMaurice Smith said Monday. No deal has been reached. Significant obstacles remain and any potential deal will not happen soon, people involved in the matter had said. However, Smith remains optimistic about an agreement. Quote, we've been talking about changes to the personal conduct policy since October and have traded proposals. We looked at the league's proposal for neutral arbitration. There's a common ground for us to get something done, said Smith at the Players Association annual meeting in Hawaii. In a statement, NFL spokesperson Brian McCarthy said, quote, this is an important area that deserves to be addressed thoughtfully and with full consideration of everyone's interests, players, clubs, and fans. We are not addressing the media for in a serious way. Continue to discuss this directly with the union and not in public. I hope this goes through.
I was screaming obscenities at my television on Monday night. Because it was announced that Martavis Bryant, who was one of my keepers for next year's fantasy campaign, has been suspended for the entire year for smoking the J's again.
Yeah.
Quit smoking the J's, Martavis Bryant. Think about poor schmucks like me that are just trying to win a couple hundred lousy bucks in their fantasy league and are now going to be stuck with some third level, third string Carolina Panther wide receiver that never gets the ball because Cam Newton runs it every single play.
No, I mean, Roger Goodell, basically, he acts as the judge and the jury. And we've seen case after case, Tom Brady's being one, Ray Rice,
right.
Adrian Peterson. You know, you don't like your suspension, you go to court, it gets overturned. There is no book of rules in the NFL. There is a, yes, this is okay, and no, this is bad. But there isn't a book saying, okay, you beat your wife, 4-game suspension. It's mishmash. There's no rhyme or reason to anything Goodell has said. And he has continually brought down the league. It's even gone as far as I don't enjoy my fall Sunday afternoons anymore because it's a joke.
The timing here is significant because, what was it? About a week ago, we learned that Roger Goodell has blown $12 million on Deflategate. I don't know
when you had, what was it, a 12-year-old in Lynn Public Schools do a little science project, and he figured out that weather actually does affect the PSI.
So
we should have hired him for $25.
Little over a week ago, we found out that Goodell blew $12 million on Deflategate, which isn't over. That bill is still running up. A case that he's going to lose, that any reasonable observer knows that he's going to lose. And I believe that some of the owners at least are fed up with this. You know, when it's a player here and there and it's not costing anybody any money, that's one thing. When you're spending $12 million of league money on a personal vendetta, which...
And has turned it into a spectacle.
It has accurately been documented that this is a personal vendetta for Roger Goodell. Clearly, you have to find some way of exercising control and putting him in a corner. Mm-hmm. But Roger Goodell is not necessarily the problem here. Because, all right, we have this recommendation that Roger Goodell should not be in charge of player discipline. Who will be?
Now, all right. I'll throw out an idea for you. One of the concepts that have been discussed, they want to have three neutral arbitrators.
Okay.
Now, they call them hearing officers. This can be anybody from, they've thrown out ideas as former judges, lawyers, but have some sort of football background.
What about Hockley? Can we get Ed Hockley in there?
That's air quotes.
I would love to see Ed Hockley.
Football background. So I don't know as far as what your football background. Did you play Pop Warner? Did you,
Ed Hockley.
Maybe.
I'm giving Ed Hockley that job and put it on TV because I want to see Ed Hockley throw down against some loser defensive end who's up for his third substance abuse policy violation. Because Hockley, that could be the biggest television series since Judge Judy. Like Ed Hockley's NFL discipline today.
It would turn into a Jerry Springer style television show. From what I understand, each side would choose one arbitrator, and then each of the arbitrators would choose a third party. How they're selected, I don't know.
Okay.
And now we're getting into semantics.
Set the arbitrators aside for a second. Where is the list of penalties and punishments? Could we just start?
Just right. You know, Derek, all that takes, it's pretty cheap to do that. You take a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And you take a pencil.
Yeah.
With an eraser, just in case you want to change it. And then you start writing.
Yeah.
And then you make photocopies
Either
of
that,
it. And then you hand it out to everybody.
Or you can save a tree and do it on a computer with a delete button.
Crazy.
Like, instead of going and hiring all of these people and making all of these wild new jobs, could somebody just sit down and write a list of violations and punishments like every other court and company in the world has? Yeah. Companies have...
Wait, like a handbook?
Companies have disciplinary policies. So the first time you show up drunk and grab the cute secretary's hindquarters, you're going to be sent home for a few days.
Yeah.
If you come in and do it again, you're going to be sent home for good. That's what we need. We need a list of violations, and I think we have a pretty good idea what the violations are by this point in time, and we need a list of penalties for those violations.
Because it's really simple. When a player actually does commit said, offense, you open up the book, pull up the email, all right. Beats the wife.
Yeah. You hit your wife.
Whole season.
Two game suspension.
It's really,
you knock your wife out cold at a casino in front of a camera, full year suspension.
Hmm.
So maybe you'll think twice, hit your wife a little instead of a lot. Don't hit your wife at all because that's not the right thing to do. But it just...
It's logic.
The problem, part of the problem is...
You're running a billion-dollar franchise like it's a lemonade stand.
That's
essentially what's going on.
Part of the problem, to be sure, is Roger Goodell, who is a very petty individual. But the bigger
part
of the...
And you're not seeing him going anywhere soon.
But the bigger part of the problem is there's no rules. There's no penalties. Nobody knows. You make it up as you go along. $8 billion corporation is what the NFL is.
You would think that it would have something as basic as a disciplinary handbook.
Yeah.
No.
These are the penalties for being bad. You smoke pot, 4 games. You smoke pot twice, 8 games. You smoke pot 3 times, full year. You smoke pot 4 times, gone.
We can figure it out.
I could write this thing for him in an hour. Give me a list of the violations. I'll give you the penalties in an hour. Mm-hmm. And then you can put them in front of the public. People can debate for a couple of days, take their suggestions, finalize the list. Then it doesn't matter who's in charge of discipline. It doesn't matter if it's Roger Goodell or a team of 7,000 arbitrators. Everybody knows what the penalty will be. And that's what's missing right now. It's not process. It's a lack of knowledge.
Well, in food news, we learned why your milk in your cereal bowl was yellow. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has opened up a criminal investigation after a video of a man urinating on Kellogg's factory assembly line surfaced online, the company announced. The video, which was uploaded to WorldStarHipHop.com on Friday, shows a man urinating on cereal as it comes off the assembly line. It then pans to a sign featuring the Kellogg's logo. An internal investigation by the food giant found that the video was recorded in 2014 at a factory in Memphis, Tennessee. A statement from the company said products potentially affected by the urine would be past their expiration dates by now. Quote, products that could have been potentially affected by Rice Krispie Treats, Rice Krispie Treat cereal, and Puff Rice Cake products, all of which would be past their expiration date, Kellogg said in a statement. Kellogg's is conducting a separate internal investigation into the matter and was working to identify the urinating man. Quote, we are outraged by this completely unacceptable situation, and we will work closely with authorities to prosecute to the full extent of the law, the company has said. My bigger question in this whole situation, where the hell do I find Rice Krispie Treat cereal? I haven't been able to find that in years.
It's...
No, don't say it, because no, I've looked...
Really?
Everywhere.
Target?
Yeah, everywhere.
Target usually has that stuff if nobody else
Derek,
does.
Derek, if you can find that, please...
Rice Krispie Treat cereal?
Cereal.
I wouldn't eat that in the... I was never a big fan of the Rice Krispie.
It's fantastic.
I miss Sugar Bombs. Sugar Bombs were like that overly puffed rice that was just like... coated in an inch of sugar.
Gluten-free.
So good. Yeah. So much sugar.
I like that film of sugar that coats, you know, the top.
So much sugar.
I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
This is,
Can I tell you something? Before everybody, you know, freaks out over this, this is just the one that you have proof of.
I was going to say.
Do you think for a...
Do you think it was just this... happened to me one day, you know.
This is not a one-off,
kids. It
was
a rainy, miserable day in January, and this guy just, you know, had a fight with his wife, hates his kids. He just came into work and said, hey, screw everybody. I'm going to urinate on your cereal.
Yeah,
this is a guy that clearly has, talk about Goodell with some vendetta. He has a vendetta with his company. He hates his job. He's peeing all over your breakfast.
People have been peeing on your cornflakes for years, folks. It's really all I can say. They pee on your cornflakes. They pee in your soup. If it is a processed food, expect that someone has urinated on it.
Yeah, it's a nice thought.
But
it's real. I mean,
the question is, would you
rather have shards of glass or some sort of screw or nail found in your cereal box? Or
that's in your food,
that
too.
Maybe a couple of your puffed rice in your cereal box has urine on it. I'd rather eat the urine.
What did they just recall last week because it was full of broken glass?
It isn't every week.
It's either broken glass or it's...
Mac and cheese is usually... Kraft is a big, person that...
They make the Kraft dinner in Canada. And the one thing I know about the Canadians is they're not peeing on your mac and cheese. That is honestly something.
They've actually come out and said that's unnatural.
As something that
yellow
comes...
Yellow coloring, as, yellow orange.
As something that comes out of Canada, I would trust that more than anything made in the United States. Right. I honestly would. And I hate to say it, but this is reality. This kind of crap is going on in factories all over this country. And the more the factory produces, the more likely it is that someone has peed on your food. So,
I would rather eat that than actually eat a burrito from Chipotle.
By the way, if you go the organic route and you're getting something from the small family farm, if that hasn't been peed on by a human being, it's been peed on by an animal. Somebody's dog has peed on it. The cows have peed on it. There's wolves and foxes running around peeing on it. Everything that you eat is covered in pee.
Yeah. How many times when you were younger, you maybe had like one of your, because guys, they pee in cans and pee in bottles and you accidentally drank it. Isn't that like a common thing? Don't people, I mean, maybe not with women. But.
No, I have made the mistake of drinking from
a cigarette,
a beer can that's had a bunch of cigarettes
yes.
thrown into it.
I think a lot of us have at parties.
Ooh, wow.
Not good.
I've never drunk bong water, but I imagine that's what it's like. No, I've
after a severe hangover in college, I used to put, because I was a classy lady, I used to put vodka in Poland Spring bottles and accidentally started chugging the next morning a Poland Spring bottle of, I believe it was maybe Rubinoff vodka.
Oh, quality. Quality. So you were drinking the good stuff.
I was on a, yeah.
You weren't a Cristal girl.
Freshman college budget.
Yeah, Rubinoff.
So I can understand the pain of drinking something when, yeah.
Yeah.
But urine-filled cereal, probably more favorable than hangovers, Rubinoff vodka
yeah.
in your water bottle.
But I mean, look, don't feign shock and outrage that this is happening.
These, I'm still going to eat Rice Krispies.
These are minimum wage workers who are abused. They throw enough sugar on there to cover up the urine taste. Just accept it. It's what's happening. Should they go find the person that was stupid enough to post it? Yes. Yeah, let's go get him and put him away for a while because he has very poor impulse control and might do something worse somewhere down the road. But folks, if you're eating processed food, I don't care if it's chips, if it's cereal, if it's hamburgers, if it's frozen dinners, somebody's peeing on it. Just accept that. Just accept it because it's happened.
There's many things in life that you just had to accept. That is one that should be at the top of your list.
Here's the way to approach this. Prove that it hasn't happened. And because you cannot prove that it hasn't happened, then you have to assume that it has. On the other hand, if you go to a nice restaurant, the odds that someone is peeing on your entree, very low.
Yeah, those open kitchens.
Yeah. Sit at the chef's table and you know you're good. Unless the chef like grabs your plate and he's like, oh, I got to go out back for a minute. And you know the chef's unhappy with you. Technology news. Google and General Motors joined forces with other self-driving automobile advocates to ask Congress for federal rules that will make it easier to get autonomous vehicles on the road. Complaining of wildly varying state rules, self-driving vehicle developers said a single set of federal guidelines is needed to allow the new technology to advance. One top area of concern is whether a licensed driver needs to be at the wheel for technology tests, something developers oppose. Duke Robotics Director Missy Louise Cummings told the committee that the technology still needs to overcome significant hurdles, including operating in stormy weather and preventing hackers from taking control of vehicles.
Exactly. You just said it, Derek. And I maintain my stance. I do not want to be on a highway. I don't want to be on the Mass Pike with a driverless car. I don't. And you had brought this up in tech news last week about the new wheels that they're creating.
Yes.
And how they can,
and it can
go,
just go in any
direction.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
I am absolutely all completely for that. If we're using that maybe in a factory setting or a large corporation like Google, and you can drive your little driverless cars around, you know, to move mail from one section of the company to another, that's fine. I don't want them on the open road next to me.
You know what I like less on the
and
open road?
Being one major thing that's going on in our world today that's actually reality, and it's very plausible that they could get into these systems.
Now you're into the realm of misinformed hysteria.
Come on.
Because what?
First of all, you have brought up before how they want to put, from if you're driving coast to coast, a Mack truck, no driver. Just
so,
go.
So what are you going to do? Hack the Mack truck to like run down everything on the highway? I mean, come on.
No, but I understand what, you know, you hack into it, they steal all the goods in it, we're done.
You know what's going to happen is I can't say the word I want to say, so I will say gangsters. The gangsters are going to figure out the codes, and they're going to figure out which trucks have the cigarettes in them, and they're going to reprogram them to show up at the side of the road, and then they'll pull up, take out all the cigarettes, and send the truck back on its way.
It's like the new school 1980s mom style.
You guys should get to work on this right now.
Yeah.
Because you'll never get caught doing this. Like, go hire some guys.
Hire some people from Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Go find some MIT guys, offer them some bucks, they'll write the code for you, all the cigarettes and jeans you want. I don't know if they still even do that or not, but they used to. I don't have a problem with self-driving cars. I really don't, because I've been following the development of this technology since the 90s when DARPA first ran the challenges, to get a self-driving vehicle that would pass a course and be able to deal with urban traffic situations. The technology is there. If this was in universal use, you could probably put an end to both traffic jams and highway fatalities, if not the overwhelming majority of road fatalities.
Yeah, but the only way that you do that is if completely across the board everybody had driverless vehicles.
Even
if we're in a situation like that, yes, then go ahead.
Even in a 50-50 situation, I think you'd be better off with the driverless vehicles out there. Because you look at what happened this afternoon. Some idiot who's weaving on the Mass Turnpike at 80 miles an hour slams into a police cruiser in Charlton that's pulled somebody over and kills a father of six. I'm much more concerned about that guy being on the road than I am the Google car being on the road, because the Google car is never going to go over 55 miles an hour. It is always the problem with it is everybody else is so busy cutting it off and trying
to
squeeze it to the side of the road.
All or nothing. You can't have mixed here and there.
No, I think you can mix.
Because the problem is, you're still going to have that one guy that's careening across the highway.
Yeah, I'm
going to
be that guy. Because
with cars that have no drivers in them, that's frightening to think about.
Because sooner or later, you're going to figure out not only the pattern that these things drive in, but the fact that they will brake to get out of your way. And like the handful of us still driving our own cars, we're going to get everywhere in record time, because you can just cut these things off and they'll back off from you.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike real drivers.
But you can never trust technology fully.
Why not?
Because there's always a situation where it will fail.
But the question is, yes, all technology fails eventually.
But at what cost?
But here's the thing.
Do you want that technology, Derek, to fail while you're on a highway with your family driving next to it?
What happens when it fails? That's the question. Smart engineers understand the technology will fail.
But I also trust a person next to me driving a car more than technology.
Are you kidding me? Do you know how drunk and hopped up half of these idiots on the highways are around here?
Yeah, if we're talking about driving down 93 at 2 in the morning.
No, any time of day. You can't get from point A to point B without risking road rage.
If I'm driving in the afternoon, I'm worried about somebody checking their Instagram.
Nothing's moving at that time of day.
That's true.
That's the only reason there isn't more carnage out there. But it's like, oh my God, there's so many idiots on the road right now that I lose my mind. You know, and I'm a safe driver.
No, and it's true. When they say distracted drivers, it's one of the major causes.
Most of the time. I do like to do 85 on the highway and camp out in the speed lane so that I can get where I'm going faster than everybody. But that's like the one thing.
Yeah, I've been witness to that.
Yeah.
But you're a good driver.
I am. And it's not like I'm doing 85 on the local roads. I've learned. I'm an adult now. I don't speed around. I know there's kids out there. There's pedestrians out there. There's animals out there. I don't want to hurt anybody. You put me out on the highway, though, I'm a maniac. You know, I'm like, yeah! You know, suddenly I can cut loose. But no, I would love to see self-driving trucks. I would love to see self-driving cars. You have to figure out what's going to happen when they fail. When they fail, are they going to pull over to the side of the road and behave themselves? Or are they just going to stop where they are, which is not the worst-case scenario? Or are they going to just be out of all control and slam into everything around them?
And also, we're in a situation where we live in Boston that has been under complete construction for the past, two decades. When you have now a blocked side, and say you're trying to get over the Longfellow going into Cambridge.
Right.
And now you have to kind of veer around. How does it know that when it's changing constantly
day? They can figure that out. The technology figures that out. They use markers, and they can see the road the same way that a human can, and they can process it the same way we can. The thing that I would be afraid of is you've got a semi you know, with 10 or 15 tons of cargo coming down the road out of all control, just smashing everything out of its way. Because until that thing runs out of gas, you're going to have a lot of bodies piling up and no way to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a situation I'd worry about. But around town, everyday operations, speeds under 30 miles an hour, I got no problem with these things. None at all. I do think we need the federal government.
Who goes under 30 now, unless you're in a school zone?
The elderly.
It's true.
Certainly the elderly. There are other people who do it. There's a good amount of it around,
yeah,
actually.
Under 30?
Slow is the new speeding.
Mm.
I don't know why.
I think I run faster than that.
Just is.
Oh, no one.